You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
8 Emmys, 5 Golden Globes, and 1 incredible conclusion.
The Showtime original series Homeland returns for its epic final season. With the world standing at the brink of war, Saul taps a fragile Carrie to return to the Middle East.
Afghanistan has changed, but so has Carrie, and no one knows if she can be trusted. With her loyalty in question, will she be branded a hero or a traitor? Claire Danes and Mandy Patinkin star.
New episodes of the final season of Homeland are now streaming only on Showtime.
Wow, look at that. Hey, everybody, it's Monday.
Yeah.
We just got caught watching there. It's the 24th
of February.
Thank
you, Jay. Thanks for counting us in, Jay. It's all good.
The most warped human being imaginable. Jay, stop talking. The show is on. February 24th, 2020. Hi, everybody. My name is Luke Thomas. That is Brian Campbell. We are the hosts of Morning Combat. How are you? We did not realize we had animation today. The animation looked pretty good, Brian Campbell.
I can't wait till we get a theme song. You know that guy on our team, Corey, the bootleg Justin Timberlake? I want him to kind of soulfully put together like a soul package.
You mean McLovin?
Yeah. I want that guy to bring in just some soul, some feel, you know, because this show, it's a lot of passion. Luke, this show has a lot of passion, all right?
It certainly does. We hope you are doing well. We have a big, big show today. We're going to talk about Wilder Fury 2. We're going to talk about UFC Auckland and a bunch of stuff in between. And before we get to any of that, Brian, we got to say, first of all, thank you to everybody who keeps subscribing, who keeps watching. Showtime is paying attention to what you're saying and what you're doing, and they're liking it, but we got to keep it going.
Look, here's the deal, people. We still got this dream that you just can't shake it, right? And we love them to the point we can no longer take, but we need you to go where we think this thing can go. And it's not, I've seen some of the comments are, oh, we better hurry up and subscribe before Showtime drops them. No, this isn't Save the Kids telethon where Uncle Jesse gets the Beach Boys to try to make everybody feel good. You and I are driven people, Luke. We know right here in this incubator, there's something special. Some of our parts are touching. There's something happening here being built. And we're gonna take this thing a long way, Luke.
The only way to get us from where we are to the next stage is, of course, to like the video. That's great. But more importantly, subscribe. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the notification bell.
You look so comfortable during that little monologue.
Well, you just can't get through 5 seconds of conversation without going, dicks! Dicks everywhere, dicks. So please, subscribe. That's how we get to the next level, okay? Now, this gentleman, Brian Campbell from CBS Sports, was in Las Vegas. And why was he in Las Vegas? Well, let's get the show started, Brian Campbell. Because, topic number one, this was the crown jewel of the combat sports weekend. Anthony Joshua, what am I saying? Tyson Fury defeats Deontay Wilder via TKO in the 7th round. Deontay's corner throws the towel. Controversially, we'll talk about that. But the bigger story here is that Tyson Fury absolutely dummied Deontay Wilder. This was not competitive at any point. Not to the 1st round, not to the 7th round, nothing. He is now your WBC heavyweight champion, Brian Campbell. There is so much to unpack from this, but you were there. I saw your hit on CBS Sports about it. So let's go to you first on this one. Tell me what the most significant aspect is of this Fury win over Deontay Wilder.
That you have this great heavyweight in Tyson Fury, this unique force, but had been such a eccentric person in career where it's like, we know his talent's great, but he's only had, 1.5 great wins coming in. The Klitschko upset and the draw with Wilder in the first fight, which we thought was a win. He'd been erratic. He'd been in and out of the lineup. He'd been playing up or down to the level of his competition. And he has one hole in his game. He's not a finisher. And yet for the biggest fight of his career, 2 months before, he switches trainers, switches mindsets, switches strategy, and walks in there against the biggest puncher of our era and knocks him out and calls his own shot. Like, this is folk hero shit. This is Paul Bunyan. This is George Foreman at age 45 knocking out Michael Moore. This is sort of like a pinch me, I remember where I was. I was there. I was in the damn arena at the MGM Grand. To be able to see somebody who we knew was great or had the potential on his best night to be great, to just do something that doesn't make any sense. a supposed light-punching defensive genius, is just like, F it. I'm going to walk this guy down and knock him out. Now, there's a lot of details into that. Professor Salt and Pepper this week, folks, you got to check out Dissected. Luke gets it. Luke can hear Jimmy on this. Obviously, there was a giant advantage for Fury coming in technique. We all knew that. But to literally walk down the biggest puncher in this game and just declare, I'm not only the heavyweight of this moment, we would love to see him against Anthony Joshua, believe me, but I'm not only the heavyweight of this moment, but I might be an all-time great, because what just happened out there is like, they're gonna build a statue to this guy one day. Like, this was some crazy shit, Luke.
The Big Lead is an interesting website. I like The Big Lead, but they had made a comment that Tyson Fury is the heir to Floyd Mayweather. And I thought, well, that's right and that's wrong. It's wrong in the sense that if you're talking about who's the biggest combat sports star now that Floyd is retired or whatever the hell he's going to do, then it's Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor is the biggest combat sports star. People say, what about Canelo? Dude, Canelo's fight against Kovalev up two weight classes. Their own broadcaster and promoter made him wait 2 hours so that two guys who are not as popular as him could, as McGregor, could then fight first. So I think Canelo is much more paid. I don't think he's the biggest combat sports star. But if we're talking just boxing, maybe it even is still Canelo. Boy, Tyson Fury is nipping at his heels. This was a star-making performance because he had, what, the first fight with Wilder did, I think, about 300,000-plus pay-per-view buys. Then he goes to the two fights on ESPN+, Plus, which were not that well-known. And then he comes out with this one.
You guys okay in the back, by the way?
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully you can get it together. The lapel. Well, I got the lapel set up better.
Jay is running the show. Right? How good could it be? But the point being is number one, this was his best performance. This is much better than the Klitschko performance. This was much better than the first Fury performance. And even against overmatched opposition, could you believe that Derek Chisora lasted longer than Deontay Wilder did?
Don't be smirched, Del Boy.
Well, this is my point. It's like he's a better boxer, but he was so outmatched in that one. But from a physicality standpoint, from a boxing standpoint, you would have thought, well, Wilder already went 12 rounds with him. He'll last longer than Chisora, and no, he doesn't. So to me, this was about two things for Tyson Fury. To me, he turned a corner as a star in the sport in this country and worldwide.
I'm gonna hit on that.
And we'll talk about it in just a second. And number two, we'll also get to this, but I think that's your best heavyweight in boxing. Tyson
You're
Fury
right.
is the best heavyweight in boxing. I think he walks through. I think he beats Anthony Joshua. We already saw what he did to Deontay Wilder. I would love to see Andy Ruiz fight, maybe even Luis Ortiz, if somehow you could make it all. But right now, that performance told me that it's not the Gypsy King, it's just the King. Tyson Fury, all hail. Him.
And I came in here on the show last week and everywhere else, CBS HQ, my podcast, all that, and said, look, like this idea of Tyson Fury calling his shot for a knockout, no one believed second round KO, right? But the idea that this could happen when you put together the skills and the size, I mean, when he adds nearly 20 pounds of muscle, Luke, and comes in at 6'9", 273, and has a 40-pound weight advantage over Wilder, and knows how to lay all over him and be quasi-dirty, it was in play. A knockout was possible, even though it just seems on the surface as so ridiculous. But the fact that he goes out there and does it, Luke, does it without controversy, does it start to finish completely one-sided, you're right. This is how you make a damn star, because I saw a lot of, this brings out the casuals, and it should, Luke. When you get a heavyweight title matchup that means this much, and you have players on this level with the personalities, the look, the records, the styles, all that, it should matter. I go on Facebook and see the casuals in my life, right? And they're like, you know, finally boxing has stars again that can cross over. Well, no, boxing always has stars. Tyson Fury's been doing this song and dance crap for years and has been incredible at it. But the best are fighting the best right now. In fact, you saw a two-network pay-per-view. You saw Bob Arum and Al Haymon come together. And all week, every single person in the media room, anywhere you talk to, is like, this is the easiest fight week I've ever seen, which certainly bodes well for the future of people working together. But it takes fights like this that the public cares about to make those big-time stars. And I think he's not bigger than Conor McGregor, but here's what he is. We haven't had an American face since Floyd Mayweather retired. Manny Pacquiao's still around. Manny Pacquiao has a giant audience, right? But the U.S. hasn't taken Canelo on a mainstream level and fully embraced him, right? You can argue Triple G is more popular in the States than Canelo. Canelo doesn't speak English. He's absolutely amazing, but it's still a boxing niche thing. Tyson Fury, with this win, with the way that Fox and ESPN promoted him, he's now the most popular boxer in the United States. How could he not be when you have the personal story, you have the singing and dancing and all that stuff, and then you have a performance like that? Again, had he just completely bamboozled him for 12 rounds and did the defensive shifty stuff, we would have stood up and applaud. But no, he walked the guy down and was probably going to knock him out anyway if the corner didn't save him. Again, this is Rumble in the Jungle in the modern era. I mean, maybe, you know, Deontay Wilder's not George Foreman and Tyson Fury's not Muhammad Ali.
That's a big comparison.
But the idea of doing the impossible, doing what your skill set wouldn't seem to make sense, going in there with that much danger, calling your shot and pulling it off. I mean, when Ali did that, and you had Ali, Poumaye, and Zaire, and you had all the kids that suddenly saw a folk hero emerge in front of them, mm-hmm. being in the arena, there was a lot of young English boys there, all dressed in pinstripe suits, all trying to get close to Tyson during the entrance. I've never seen kids at boxing matches on this level. Can you imagine what
they're... Well, you gotta go to those Jake Paul fights, apparently.
They're a good point. Could you imagine what they're thinking? Like, we just saw somebody do something that's just absolutely ridiculous.
Our Tyson was Mike Tyson. Their Tyson will be Tyson Fury. To me, you know, it's kind of funny. We've been over the Klitschko era for a while. You know, obviously he lost to Tyson Fury. He lost to Anthony Joshua. Like, the shift already happened. But I don't think that the casual sports watching audience had really either understood or even accepted that. Because, look, you had Anthony Joshua emerge, and then he loses to Andy Ruiz, so they had to do that rematch, and it wasn't particularly exciting, and they fought in Saudi Arabia. Joshua got his belts back. That's all fine. He earned the fight, or the win. It's okay. And then you had this draw between Fury and Wilder in the first fight. So no one had really kind of put their stamp on the division and said, I'm the new leader. This was the nail in the coffin of the Klitschko era. Now folks can firmly say, wow, we really are past that. This is a new dawn for heavyweight boxing. We now have a North Star, so to speak, in Tyson Fury. Now, Deontay Wilder will be back. We'll talk about that in a second. Anthony Joshua is as viable a contender, or well, not a contender, but, you know, an opponent and a challenger and a boxer as everything else, as well as a star-making attraction. Nevertheless, though, I finally felt like, okay, we have turned the page from the old impression of what heavyweight boxing has been to, yes, not the most clued-in audience, but the not most clued-in audience is the biggest audience. They need firm confirmation. Boy, that was this.
And they need, you know, look, the audience still tuned in for the biggest Floyd Mayweather fights, right? He still did monster pay-per-view numbers because he was a master seller.
Not for the Berto fight.
Well, come on, that was just bad matchmaking. Sorry, Showtime. But for the casual fans, Luke, they still paid the money, tuned in, and then were like, man, I don't get it. That was a boring fight, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing boring about this. This is how you become a star. And I think for Fury, because he's so polarizing, he hits every audience base perfectly. If you're only watching him because he's got this great mental health comeback story, you're hooked. If you're only watching him because you used to remember him going online and ripping every nationality or group or sex or whatever, you might think this guy's some badass. If you only care because he walked down that slugger and knocked him out, suddenly you've built a nation of fans. I think that this is a guy who has a special kind of magic around him, like I compared in the past to Conor McGregor and Ali, and I think this fan base is, like, talk about a gamble that Bob Arum and company did.
Wow.
By throwing money at and co-promoting him at that time when you're like, okay, he had the draw against Wilder, but can he keep the train on the tracks? And even this past year, when Fury had two wins, I mean, he almost lost the title to Otto Wallin by a massive cut. And to see him then when the lights are the brightest, and that's when you know Fury's an actual all-timer, when the lights are the absolute brightest, this guy exceeds your expectations
of
what he can do.
Walking up to Patsy Cline was so ballsy, so genius. He didn't have the flair for the dramatic in the way that Adesanya dancing did, per se, but in terms of just utter confidence and the risk you run if you lose, it was amazing to see. I'll say this, too, about Tyson Fury. It needs to be said. If you watched the first fight with Wilder and then you watched the German scrub who he waxed.
The Schwaz, yes. May the Schwaz
be
with you.
And then Otto Wallin, you didn't get the sense that you always knew Tyson was a good boxer. You kind of alluded to it. You always kind of knew Fury was ahead of the game if he really needed to be, if he needed to jab his way to 12 rounds. Dude, I was very skeptical that switching to Sugar Hill Stewart was the right idea. I did have George Lockhart on my radio show, and he did confirm for me. So he assuaged some of my concerns about the weight. So I was less concerned about the weight. But I don't know. I think Ben Davison is a credible coach. I think he's a good trainer, and I like where his head was at. I thought they had a winning game plan the first time. But, dude, wow. We have to say it. Tyson Fury has leveled up. I'm not saying he can't go back and do the jab 12 rounds if he needs to, depending on the styles. But this was the point about the first fight. The first fight was just sort of avoid the worst of Deontay. This was avoid the worst of Deontay by never letting Deontay get out of first gear. Absolutely.
The boxer became the puncher, Luke. He stepped to the bully, and the bully had nothing left. And the bully had more to give because Wilder was willing to go out and everything.
This is why I think Anthony Joshua might be in trouble. You have, in the case of Fury now, he can go two ways with it. He can go forward if he needs to dominate. He can back up if he needs to be slick about it. Every space of that ring he commands. I think it's not just that he got a dominating win or that the Klitschko era is over, that a new star is born, or that the boxing powers that be work together. All of that is true. Dude, he got better. He got way better. That was a brilliant game plan. And it shows us, not only is I think he the best heavyweight on the planet, he's the most versatile boxer in the heavyweight division, certainly at the elite level.
And it's always hard to compare eras, but it becomes fun when you start doing the how great could Tyson Fury be if he adds a couple more big wins and rounds out the resume a little more. When you're comparing a guy who's 6'9" with that skill set, Luke, you can play mythical matchup with anybody in history because he's got I mean, look, he completely well-rounded himself. He's got everything.
So let's go to the next one here. I'm going to go to you again on this one, too. The big question now is, as it always is in combat sports, you get a big win, and then people always say, well, what is next? Now, Eddie Hearn, the promoter of Matchroom Boxing, has a deal with DAZN. Anthony Joshua's deal, according to Brian Campbell, which we'll talk about in just a second, it's not exclusive, per se, and all the powers that be are saying, we're going to make it happen. If sometime in the summer, we're going to find a way to get Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury together. Brian Campbell, please go first. What is the likelihood of that? And we'll talk about how big it will be in just a second. But first, let's talk about some of the obstacles to making that happen, such as they exist.
Well, I do want to say I think it'd be the biggest fight in boxing you can make. The biggest fight in boxing right now is Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury for all the belts. I don't care if you do it on...
Dead serious question. Is that, and I'm not doing a bit, what sells more pay-per-views? That, which by the way, will be in the UK, which will hurt its pay-per-view
numbers.
Could
be in Saudi Arabia. Could be on the moon. I don't care. I think it's still going to...
Mayweather-McGregor 2.
See, that's not a real
fight. It's not real boxing. I understand.
Okay, touche. MAPAC 2 might even eclipse it, okay. Just on the
but
star.
But to your point,
okay.
Ahead.
It's not going to happen this year. And we got to wake up to this. It's not going to happen this year because business and money talk. So here's the deal. I think that fight was exceptionally promoted, especially the last 2 weeks, especially fight week, wall to wall, everywhere you look.
I thought ESPN did a phenomenal job.
Every single corner, FS1, ESPN, whatever, it was this fight wire to wire. They did an incredible job. That means you're probably going to see great receipts. Deontay Wilder has 30 days to cash in or to trigger this automatic rematch clause. There's a lot we can talk about here. Wilder took a ton of damage. You know, was the corner right in stopping when they did? We can get into all that.
We will.
But here's the deal. Wilder's in every single fight. And even though Fury was incredibly dominant and amazing in this fight, that wasn't Wilder. I feel like there's going to be some excuse that comes up, right? He did say after the fight, when saying, I'm not going to make excuses, he referenced some personal problems. There's some feeling of a leg injury. I just feel like something's going to pop up. It won't take away from Tyson Fury's win, but you can go back and watch that, and you did. That's not Deontay Wilder. That's not the Deontay Wilder we know. He took a horrendous beating, but I know the fighter that's inside of him and the warrior, and when you have that style where you could knock somebody out at any time, we're going to see this third fight. The promoters and managers and powers that be are going to make sure of it. You have to believe that at this point. And also, for as great as Fury is, and he's proven now twice in my eyes that he's better than Wilder, Wilder's still in that fight. Wilder's still in that fight in a big way. We're going to see that fight.
He's in that fight in a big way promotionally. And I think some of the obstacles we're going to talk more about it with Anthony Joshua in just a second. But I have to tell you, we'll get to Wilder in just a second, but I really disagree he's in that fight. He looked that way where he was just sort of like a lamb to the slaughter because Tyson Fury made him look that way.
Oh, he got dominated from start
to
finish.
I'm not saying that Wilder...
Equilibrium shots change fights, as when Anthony Joshua
enough.
Got hit by Ruiz.
I'm not saying a third fight would look exactly the same or that Wilder can't make adjustments. Obviously, he can, and you're right. You still got that nuclear power. You never know. And he did land a couple of those on Fury a little bit early. I was like, this could get interesting.
Two in the first round. Fury moved with it, but he took...
But
he
there
took
is. We knew there was a gap in skill before. Mm-hmm. We thought it was this. It is this, dude. It is a major difference in skill. Wilder's got an uphill climb for the third one. But still, if they want it, for folks who are like, why can't they just make it between Joshua and Fury now? What is the contractual
All right, here's the
situation?
Deal. So Joshua fights on DAZN. Ever since DAZN launched, he's been sort of the face, along with Canelo, of what they do. But he's not exclusively tied with them. It was sort of a smart loophole that Eddie Hearn tied in there. So for the idea of if a Wilder-Joshua Super Bowl became so big, they could make it happen. From everyone I asked, from everyone using logic here, the male and female parts still don't come together. And that means DAZN, who came on the board to kill pay-per-view and become the streaming force, how are they going to join up with a pay-per-view provider? You know, it's different when HBO and Showtime came together for MAPAC. It's different when Fox and ESPN just came together for this fight. These are two companies that do pay-per-view. DAZN doesn't do that. So for Fury Joshua to happen next, well, first of all, Wilder would have to say no. And if Wilder's saying no to this, then I think you have to have major questions if he's even going to continue in his career, because that would be such a disastrous one loss that, I mean, that's not who Wilder is. I'm saying just on Wilder's reputation and his personality, mm-hmm. he's taking this fight. But you would need that fight to be refused. And then personally, I think you would need Anthony Joshua to basically say, hey, DAZN, we had a good run, but I got to go over there to mainstream pay-per-view again. I know you tried to kill pay-per-view. I got to go over here to mainstream pay-per-view, and we got to make this happen.
Give me a give the listeners here and the viewers, give us a plausible scenario of how it could happen. Talk to us about the mechanics of how you make a deal here.
It depends on the backroom money situation, okay? What we do know is that Deontay Wilder, last year, was offered $120 million deal from DAZN for four fights, guaranteed two of them against Joshua, the generational wealth he was talking about, and he turned that down. Some of that was to sort of be in control of his own career. Like, what if he, you know, blew up and had the opportunity to make a fight like Fury or a third one like Fury? He wouldn't have that control. DAZN would. He gave that up. So for it to happen, unless Anthony Joshua says, sorry, DAZN, I got to go make this money on pay-per-view, yep. I would feel it would have to be a two-fight deal in which one fight would be on DAZN and a rematch would be on ESPN pay-per-view or whatever the setup was. I don't think you can, unless DAZN tomorrow says, hey, guys, I know we tried to kill pay-per-view. I know we're trying to do the streaming thing. But this fight's so big, it's got to be regular pay-per-view, so we're going, I don't think that happens.
How do you do a two-fight deal, though? I mean, yes, you can trigger a rematch, but, like, what if the first fight is either so boring no one wants to see it or so deeply uncompetitive that no one wants to see a second one? You just do it anyway?
Yeah.
Because then the person who gets the second of those two fights, or the person, the entity, whether it's DAZN or ESPN, who gets the second of those two fights is on the losing end of the deal automatically. Depending how, I guess it would depend on the rev split, right? But still,
you know,
it's a very difficult case.
And certainly the wild card is somebody like a Saudi Arabia who comes in and is just like, I've got $1 billion for you guys to make this fight. That's the kind of thing where you can then go, okay, well, then the networks may not matter as much. You know, it's all kind of gray. But
should they put the fight? Should be in Wembley, yeah.
It's the biggest fight in England, English boxing history by far.
Oh, I mean, English boxing is hot.
It's been hot for a few years now. I mean, they did, you know, George Groves and Carl Froch in front of 80,000.
No, but I'm saying now you've got in multiple weight classes, you've got real standout star attractions.
I mean, ideally, I guess it'd be there, but if it's there, then it's on at 5 in the afternoon on
right.
Saturday. But, you know, that's sort of our East Coast bias here. Who really cares what time it's on, what day it is, what country it is, what planet it's on? Just get it in front of us. We need to see it at
yeah.
the end of the day.
It would be amazing just the same. Now, this brings all of us to a question about Deontay Wilder. So let's go there. Boy, that was a bad loss he took against Tyson Fury on Saturday. Now, you were telling me before the show, because I did not hear this when I did Dissected, that there is no burst eardrum.
Yahoo's Kevin Ioli reporting that it was just a 2 or 3 centimeter cut that bled throughout the whole fight.
Still, he
no
did,
broken jaw, no broken eardrum.
Fair enough, which is good to hear because those are much more difficult injuries to get over. But nevertheless, he appeared to have equilibrium issues after getting dropped in that third round from that point forward, whether it was an eardrum, apparently not, or something else. The question is where he goes from here. So let's talk about that. You're saying he probably should and will invoke the rematch clause. Now, whether he will, I suspect...
Well, should is an interesting thing, okay?
Well, let me make this point then, because whether he will or whether he won't, I get the idea that there is a lot of growth that is possible. Even at his advanced age, he's actually older than Fury. Still, in terms of the game plan he could employ, in terms of some... I haven't said that. Remember, we said last week he didn't have to change a whole lot to fight the Fury that I thought he was going to fight, add some things in, and he did go to the body. You did see some feints. It's just that Fury took it all the way. But here's my point. I don't know if the folks around him are really best situated to get him where he needs to go, Brian. First of all, you had his head trainer, whether he was doing it for effect or not, saying, I don't think that they should have thrown the towel. You are out of your mind.
If he's not just trying to get Deontay's back, almost to just say, look, Deontay, I got your back. You know, they shouldn't have thrown it. You're tough, all that. If it's really that he believes that...
But even if you do that, Brian, you're still...
I'm sitting here with my jaw dropped.
Right.
I'm literally just
here's
like,
the thing.
He took a beating.
Fine. You take your guys back in the media, and then privately you tell them something different. Okay, I understand the strategy. You're still spreading cancerous ideas. And the guy who threw the towel, forgive me his name.
Mark Breland.
He saved Deontay Wilder.
He was the adult in the corner.
Savage beating. Yeah. So I give him all the credit.
And people have to wake up. This isn't the kind of potential beating. Had he hung on for another 3-4 rounds, this isn't the kind of beating that we're just like, oh, I don't know if he's ever going to be the same in the ring.
Altering beating.
This is like a life-altering, life-ending type thing because pillow fisted or not, Tyson Fury 6'9", 273.
And he was leaning into
it. And, I mean, this is, you know.
And when he was against the ropes where you're just absorbing. I mean, that wasn't rope-a-dope. That was just rope.
But I do want to just bring up one thing. Equilibrium shots consistently, just like a body shot to the liver can end a fight at any point, mm-hmm. equilibrium shots change people. They're never the same in the middle of a fight. Andy Ruiz Jr., the big shot that hurt Anthony Joshua in round three, was an equilibrium shot. He was dizzy, couldn't get his legs back under him the rest of the time. People remember Miguel Cotto, Sergio Martinez. I know there were a million knockdowns in that fight, and Sergio had a bad knee, but that first shot was equilibrium. He was never the same. I tend to believe here that as much as Deontay did get whitewashed start to finish, that equilibrium shot completely changed the fight.
Fair enough. But even before that, he was getting murked. So let's just be clear about that. But this is my point. We saw that Fury, you could make a case, obviously we thought he did win the first time out, but I thought it was so, frankly, ballsy to go and then change your trainer. And not just change the trainer, change the mindset. I'm going to be the bully. Change the tactics. Change the strategy. Change everything. And it paid huge dividends. I'm going to say this. Deontay Wilder cannot win against Tyson Fury in all likelihood if he doesn't. Yes, I know he's got a nuclear bomb in his right hand. Didn't do him fuck all good on Saturday night against this Tyson Fury. And yes, if they fought 100 times, maybe he'd find a way to land it. But in all likelihood, this is the thing. Everyone's like, oh, we've always known about Deontay's weaknesses. Right, but they got to live behind the reality of a right hand. Well, what happens when this is taken away? Well, now the bad parts about his boxing get magnified, and he was made to pay for them, Brian Campbell. And I'm telling you, here's the other part about this. If I can look at what little old me, a nobody, can look at what Tyson Fury was doing and finding ways to have an effect, again, before the equilibrium shot on Deontay Wilder, dude, he set a bit of a blueprint here. That's the big takeaway for me. Deontay Wilder got audited. And Tyson Fury, I'm not saying, listen to me, I know what you're going to say. Not every other boxer is Tyson Fury.
Not only that, I'm going to say there's only, I've said it all the whole buildup, there's one man who was able to do what happened on Saturday.
Okay, fair enough.
Because who else is 6'9 with that brain, with that heart, with all that?
He is the king and the king alone. I will not argue with that. What I'm telling you is any good boxer and good boxing trainer is going to look at that and say, well, maybe we can't take that. My guy can't do that, but he can do that and he can do that. And maybe they don't even win, but I'm telling you, the threat that is Deontay Wilder, if he doesn't make changes, if it's just that same one, he just got a lot less dangerous.
Yeah, he's at a potential crossroads here, you know, being, I know heavyweights age late. I know he didn't start fighting until he's 19. I know he's, 34? But this potentially is a crossroads fighter of are you still super elite or did this fight forever change you? You still don't know. Wilder had never lost before. And the only quasi-loss that, the draw, he barely took any damage. So you don't know on any fighter, Luke, how they bounce back mentally from getting absolutely devastated. I'm not willing to count Deontay Wilder out yet because, I mean, if you could have one attribute in that situation, you'd take his power, really, of anything else.
But answer this for me. It's just a question. Do you think that his trainers and the people around him have just basically said, look, you've got game-changing power. We're not really going to do much with the rest of this.
It's rather fair
than
to say that
rather
now.
Rather than saying, you've got game-changing power and we still need to build things around
it's fair this. To say that in hindsight from what we just saw, but I do think Wilder has been underrated in terms of his fight IQ and setup. What Jay Deese and Mark Breland have done a great job through the years is basically do what you just said. Okay, we know he's awkward. We know we can't reteach him. I mean, look, he came to the sport at 19. People like Tyson Fury, who are sort of the rare ones, you know, like a Floyd Mayweather, when they're 2, 3, 4 years old, they know they're going to be a fighter, right? They're already, they grow up in it. It's different. You're never going to make Deontay Wilder a perfect boxer. But is it fair now to say there were maybe potential levels of growth that just didn't happen, that maybe they sent. I mean, it's easy to say that now in hindsight. I wouldn't be against if he changed up teams completely. And I don't say that as a panic move. Oh, you lost suddenly, so let's kick these guys to the curb. Maybe add in a new influence. How many times have we seen that? How many times have we seen great fighters? There's certain great fighters like an Oscar De La Hoya who regularly sought out different trainers and switched and found different grooves. Miguel Cotto's another one who really kind of was defensive for a few years with Pedro Diaz, then found for Freddie Roach and found out how to be offensive again and was just happy with that. You may find somebody who just gets it and can speak to Deontay a certain way and get a different side out of him. He's still only 34. Heavyweights age late. I don't feel like we have to start saying, oh, the third fight's a cash out. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think by any means.
The third fight is not a cash out provided he makes changes. Provided he does the same thing that got him there on Saturday night, you like his chances? Because I sure as hell do.
I wouldn't predict him to win the third fight, but I'm not going
to. Bro, that was Master Yoda versus Luke Skywalker.
Dude,
that was not.
I've been on the Tyson Fury train from day one-ish, okay? You don't have to teach me that. My point is, I also know who Deontay Wilder is. And let's say we have a third fight, okay? Let's say Tyson Fury is having big-time success early, but not the kind of, like, equilibrium shot, damage, knocked him down type of success. Deontay Wilder's still going to be in that fight.
Punch did not land by accident. The punch landed by virtue of the very specific strategy and tactical approach. He was going to get bombed
on. I'm the guy on this show who said the knockout could happen. I believe that.
Fair enough, dude. I'll give you all the credit in the world. I'm not dismissing Deontay Wilder. I'm dismissing Deontay Wilder provided he doesn't make changes. If he makes the changes, I am absolutely willing to say, let's give this guy a second chance or let's see what he can do.
He's got to commit to that jab.
If he just stays in Tuscaloosa and doesn't bring somebody in or go someplace else, I don't know why. What would give you confidence that it'd be, oh, yes, he's got game-altering power? Dude, he landed 9 punches over the course of 3 rounds on Tyson Fury. It didn't do anything.
While that's true, the proof is in the puttin', as the great Floyd would say, and the puttin' tells you that every single person not named Tyson Fury that's gone in there with this psychopath has finished looking up at the stars, and oh yeah, Fury got dropped twice in the first one as well. So he ain't out of this.
Here's the thing. Remember Ronda Rousey after she lost to Holly Holm?
I really don't remember that. When did that happen?
She didn't make any changes.
How lame is this t-shirt, by the way? I had to get it, Luke.
Where did you get it?
What a throwback, all right?
Where did you get it?
Oh, nice online deal for $4.95. Couldn't pass
you
it
You love
up,
these
right?
Shirts no one wants. The point being is if you have these like really bad losses where you kind of get audited, it happens where guys can go back and make changes and do something special about it, right? Tyson Fury didn't get audited in the first fight, but the fact that he got knocked down the way he did probably made him feel like he did, even though he probably took solace in getting up off the canvas. And he smartly made, I questioned it, but he was right in the end, and credit to him. I think Deontay Wilder needs to have a look in the mirror and say, how am I going to get past what happened? Mm-hmm. Doing the same old shit is not the answer. It's just not the answer ever, especially against that guy. Now, maybe he could fight Anthony Joshua down the road, and it's fine.
I think the same old shit knocks Anthony Joshua out.
So maybe the answer is it's just that guy. But if you're going to exercise that rubber match clause and take the third one right away, and you're going to not do anything different other than take 2 L's back-to-back after the draw, well, he had the 2 wins in between.
Well, let's go rumble in the jumble comparison, to be honest with you here. George Foreman? Never the same in that early incarnation of him after that loss to Muhammad Ali. Yeah, got into a couple wars after that. Then he lost to Frazier in the rematch, and he went away from the sport. I know he had that miraculous comeback, but that's still in play. It's not that couldn't happen. But here's one thing I said leading into this fight. A lot of people asked me, what's the one key no one's talking about that can tell us that this is going to be a great fight? The mental toughness of both. It is through the roof. Tyson Fury's on a different level of mental toughness in terms of strategy mixed with heart, mixed with all that. But Deontay Wilder was willing to go until he was not cold. And I have seen that in his career, sort of a will that brings him out. So I'm saying that I think that will overcome some of the things that were lost in this fight. Yes, to your point, can we get somebody else in there? Can we get another voice in there? Can we re-examine what's going on? Can we maybe take the third fight later in the year and really take some time?
He has 30 days to exercise the rubber match clause. If he wants to exercise it and then give himself some time to get better, to have a real different approach and really work on some things, I think then I'll be like, okay, let's see what Deontay's got. But just staying in Tuscaloosa doing the same old thing, yeah, you can beat all the same old heavyweights. You're not going to beat that guy.
And can we quickly just say, I know a lot of people are writing the column, it's a trendy thing, but it's right. Mark Breland he was a real man.
I'm not exaggerating. He was a hero that night, dude. You, I don't know if he saved Deontay's life per se, but he could have. He certainly, I'll never forget. Like, and we'll move on from this. Give me one fight, MMA or boxing, where you saw someone take a savage beating and they were never the same afterwards. Kermit Citron took a few of those, huh? What's one fight where you were just like, after that, they're just not the same anymore?
How about Meldrick Taylor against Julio Cesar Chavez 1? I mean, that was certainly a giant fall from grace.
For me, in MMA, it's the Rich Franklin-David Loazo fight. David Loazo took 5 rounds of beating. His corner did not save him. And I don't think he was ever the same after that. He could still beat decent guys. He's still a good martial artist and an important contributor to the martial arts community. He was not the same prize fighter after that.
I mean, there's been many examples, but yeah. All right. I'm with you, Luke.
What hell of a night. Oh, last thing on this. Did you like their entrances? Jay was like, it took too long, because of course Jay said that. He's right. It did.
What other thing did Jay say today? Can we say that on the air? We can't say that on the air.
He was right that this part did take too long, but coming out on the throne, the women are carrying it.
This is how you win the casual fans.
I thought it was amazing. Dude, people want to see. When boxing is ridiculous, sometimes it's ridiculous. But sometimes when boxing is ridiculous, it's fucking grand. That is grand.
And did you hear Jay Diaz had a quote, though, where he was saying Wilder's ring entrance gear, which, by the way, was completely next level. There's rumors that it cost like $60,000 to make. His eyes are turning red like it was the old Vader thing.
He looked like a Mardi Gras Decepticon.
Yeah, there he is. That it was too heavy and it may have wore down his legs.
Do you know who also used that excuse, by the way? Remember Joe San when he fought in UFC would carry the big cross?
Oh, yeah.
He would get to the cage and be like super winded. It's like, dude, maybe you don't carry lumber to the fucking octagon.
Yeah, remember they used to have this clown named Michelle Pineda who would do the dance routine on the way in and then gas out. Hey, Joe San, not a great human. I think he's still alive.
I think he got murdered in prison.
After that run on the Austin Powers movies as, what was it, Odd Job or something? Judo Chop.
Rapist?
He was a rapist.
By the way, I didn't.
So was Kevin Bacon in Sleepers. MMA fans
feel appreciate that. Did you see how Wilder and Fury each had their own logos on their gloves? I was like,
yeah.
MMA
That's
fighters,
a 90s reference,
just
by the way.
Paying attention. Okay, let's move on now to some MMA stuff before our audience completely alienates us. Or we alienate them. So UFC Auckland was on Saturday before the big boxing fight. And in that main event, I know you saw it. I've not talked to you about it, so don't say anything just yet. I'll go to you first on this one, too, because I'm feeling generous, goddammit. You had Dan Hooker and Paul Felder absolutely empty the tank down there in Auckland, New Zealand. Dan Hooker takes what can only be called a controversial split decision. Before we talk about the scoring and everything else.
Do you really think it's controversial?
Let me finish. Okay. Let me just say this, because I think we can find.
I do have a co-host credit in my contract.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I know we can find some unanimity here, dude. You had two guys who are on great win streaks, and were outside that top five bubble, and they knew there was no way to get to that upper echelon of that division if they didn't absolutely empty the tank against a well-matched foe who had an indefatigable attitude against them. And they did it, dude. I don't care who you think won or lost. You don't often see main events from guys, in the words of your own Twitter bio, dude, they were daring to be great. They were giving every ounce of what they had, and they tried, and it doesn't work out for everybody. It's a zero-sum game. There can only be one winner. Were you not... I was awe-inspired by
humbled, that. Humbled is the word, yeah. There's the two guys that are trying to be super elites, right? They're on the verge of being elite, like you mentioned. And I always consider it like you got a jug. And they were willing to pour that jug out like early, like midway through that fight. And to see Paul Felder have that fourth round when his corner, when Duke Rufus is like, do it for your daughter, and then come out and just explode and kind of seemingly like he turned that fight around. I mean, Luke, it's humbling.
It's why we watch.
It's why we watch. The fact that they're already in the most dangerous, deepest division, one of the best periods of any division in UFC history, maybe the best period ever in this lightweight division where it's all killers. To get to the next level, you got to go through a five-round hellacious thriller like this to get there. But the moment for me was Paul Felder's reaction afterwards. The moment that just touched my heart where he's near tears and where he basically says, like this might be it for me, because you know what he's feeling on the inside. He's feeling that, you know, I'm 35. Yeah, I've got this burgeoning second career as a broadcaster. Yeah, the great comment he made about his young child being 4 years old and he's, you know, never around. But it's the idea that he's daring to be great. He knows how great he can be, and yet he may have found out, and this is harsh, but this is reality, that he's just short of the super elite. That by emptying everything he has and being able to walk through hell against a guy in Hooker who might be a title contender or a champion one day, he's showing you some really bright things. That it just wasn't good enough. And that, like, in that moment, you know what he's feeling, and it's just heartbreaking because every step I have bet against Paul Felder or thought, man, he's a tough out, but he's not that. Right. And I sort of said that heading into this fight, and it was just barely proven true. And that's how close sometimes, Luke, you come to being a champion or being an elite or being a gatekeeper and all that. And Paul Felder gave every ounce. I mean, you saw the shape he came in for this fight. This was his Super Bowl.
Tremendous.
This was his sort of life-altering career crossroads moment. And, dude, he was great, and it wasn't good enough.
Right.
And if he does walk away, I would get it. I would be like, I don't think he will. I think he'll, you know.
His coach, Duke Rufus, messaged me and told me he's not going to.
Yeah, so. I don't think he will, because when you're still that good, there's still paydays to make. There's still things you can do. And, by the way, I'm not saying he can't come back and win big ones, but you did feel for him in that moment like he just maxed himself out.
Right. I mean, if you give everything you have and it's not enough, you begin to have some real existential questions at that point. That being said, how did you score it?
3-2. I gave the first three to Hooker. I felt fairly confidently. I mean, you can make a case, and I felt...
You did not give Hooker the fifth.
I felt just as strong that I gave Felder the last two.
Interesting. I gave it 3-2 to Felder. And the difference for me is that I thought the fifth round's a little hard to score because he doesn't do much with the takedown, but he holds it for like a solid minute plus, which to me kind of counts a little bit.
It's something.
But I thought that the more damaging strikes, for the most part, came from Felder, especially...
I did in 4 and 5.
His right hook was landing, I think it was his right or left hook, I have to go back and watch, but there was a hook he kept landing at the end of his combinations.
Left
over,
hook, yeah.
Yeah. Over and over and over again, it was just bludgeoning. Dan Hooker's face on that same side was like... It was funny, because between his Kiwi accent and then his face being swollen, I couldn't understand a word he said.
Yeah, I didn't know what language. He almost showed his johns, too. I know you were not into that stuff, but that was interesting.
Nevertheless, though, I just thought overall the more punishing damage, and the popping his head back with the jabs, for example, I thought it came from Felder. But I recognize it's very difficult to score. It's not a robbery when it goes this close. It's just for me. Do we have that picture of them in the Jay? If you have it,
oh, it's like Rocky II. There's like the opening scene in Rocky II, right?
The two guys in the look at that in the stretchers like that in the gurneys. You mean this is what it's about, folks? These two guys in the toughest division. One can't see out of his eye. The other one's face looks like he got stung by a bee. They're all strapped up.
I mean,
they need
seriously,
to go to the hospital.
Look,
it's unbelievable.
Between this and between, I'm sure people have seen the video of Karolina Kovalkiewicz, who lost, and she's like 2-6 in her last 8, and she got the crap beat out of her in that fight against the Chinese young fighter. But
Yao Xiong or something like that?
It just re-wakes you to realize what it takes.
And here's the point.
What it takes to be at this level.
Yeah.
I mean, what they put them, I mean, in a victory. I mean, Dan Hooker was in a car wreck. Right. And he's the winner, you know?
I mean, here's the point about this, too. Like, the Kovalkiewicz reality is this. Her corner failed her. Let's just say it out loud. Her corner failed her because she wasn't competitive at any point. She couldn't see. She was in no position to win. These guys were taking mountainous amounts of abuse. But every round was kind of close. Some are more clear than others to judge. But even down before that takedown happened in the fifth round where Hooker got it, you were saying to yourself, this could still go just about any way. So the punishment just has to kind of roll on.
It almost looked like Felder was closing in on a potential stoppage.
Right.
You know, like there was a couple moments where Hooker
so
was.
So you couldn't, as a corner, you couldn't in good conscience stop it then because it's still dramatically competitive. And yet in the end, there has to be a loser. It breaks your heart. It really, really does. But in the end, if you didn't have respect for Paul Felder or Dan Hooker before, I hope this is one of those cases where you get a chance to wake up.
All right, I'm a Dan Hooker guy, okay? From the beginning, the first sort of, I forgot the win.
I thought he would win. I didn't think he'd win like this,
the
though.
The win that sort of put him on the map originally, that was the win where I'm like, oh, man, who
the
is
Jim
this guy?
Jim Miller or Gilbert Burns?
It might be the Jim Miller one. We're sort of like, okay, maybe a future title contender.
Yeah.
I still see that. This was a blood and guts victory. But are we getting any nervous that
right.
two beatdowns now, the Barbosa loss and this one in which he won, you can't have too many of those.
So he wants Gaethje. I got to tell you, I think it might... It's hard to know what to do at the top of lightweight because you got Dustin being like, hey, I want to fight Ally Quinta at 170. Now, I guess or if we're lightweights and we fight at 170, that should still count for 155, but you don't really know what to do with Dustin. Nate's kind of floating out there. You don't really know what's going to happen with him. Now, I guess Jorge has obviously at 170 already got business with Kamaru. We'll see later. But the point being is Khabib and Tony still on a collision course. Connor kind of floating out there. It's not really clear. Justin Gaethje believes he's entitled to a title shot. But it's like, is he just going to wait around? Is he going to get it? Connor's going to steal that if he wants it. So I'm not saying that if I'm managing Justin Gaethje, that I think that's the best fight. But I don't think it's the worst call. I actually kind of like that fight for Justin a little bit.
That's ballsy for Hooker to call that out. Because here's the deal on Hooker,
it's
okay?
Super Bowl. Dude, especially after that beating.
If you try to point fight Justin Gaethje, you could lose your soul. You have to finish him. Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier showed us. You have to dig in and get dirty and get king of street combat and just finish that man.
Hooker is typically a finisher.
Can Dan Hooker finish that guy? That's going to be interesting to see. That's a tough-ass test.
Yeah, and also, it's not just about finishing Justin Gaethje. You have to be willing to take and able to take an enormous amount of abuse.
Which he is, but that's where the fear comes in of how many in a row is
smart. Two of these that have been kind of tough. All right, and then last but not least, let's just give a shout-out to an incredibly impressive lady from UFC Auckland. How about Angela Hill? Angela Hill has fought 6 times in 11 months, going 4-2. I think it's a 20-plus day span between her last fight and then this one. Winning this one against Loma Lukbunmi, who a lot of folks don't know, very talented Thai fighter who sort of transitioned over to MMA. And before this, just given Hannah Seifers the beatdown.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, I am pretty amazed by this. Beyond impressed. Now, the question is, like, how impressive is it? Shouts to Sean Alshadi over at The Athletic. He put together a list of other fighters who either around or inside of a calendar year have put together 6 fights.
Let me guess, Chris Lieben.
Chris Lieben is one of them. Thiago Santos is another one. Now, they went 5-1 in that range. There's some other ones as well. The only one who went 6-0. Can you guess?
John Jones.
In six fights in
that's a short period of time. Yeah.
No, it's Donald Cerrone.
That should have been Donald obvious. Cerrone, yes.
And he got wins over Eddie Alvarez, and he fought on 15 days' notice. After his last fight, he fought Benson Henderson and got that win as well. So that's like the best one. But that was actually technically a bit of a longer time span than what Angela Hill has done. Technically, it is possible she could become, in the modern era, the first fighter to win 7 fights in 12 months. Here's what stands out
that's
to me.
That's insane.
Or to fight 7 times in 12 months. Here's what stands out to me about this, Brian. She won 4. She lost 2. Okay. This is what I love about it. I'll give her credit. She one time, I was talking about on Twitter, I was talking about Donald Cerrone's, you know, just crazy, like 1 year, 4 fights, next year, 4 fights, next year, 5 fights, next year, 5 fights, this amazing schedule. And she said to me, I'll never forget this, on Twitter, it's public, you know, if we got offered fights like that, there's a lot of fighters who could do that. And I don't think every fighter is Donald Cerrone, but credit to her. She was actually right. She can actually do that. 2 things. One, some fighters operate better on a quicker schedule. Clearly, I think she is one of them. Number 2, dude, she is now, her next fight will be, I think, her 20th professional fight. She is finally coming into her own. She was having to fight, I think, in her 4th fight, like Rose Namajunas, or, you know, very
part
very
of that original class of the strawweight 2014 tough.
That's right. And you didn't get a clear sense of exactly how good she was. And she stumbled along the way a little bit.
I mean, let's be honest, she was a gatekeeper for a while, sort of like win one, lose two, win two, lose one, and just sort of back and forth.
The standout to me is that I think she operates better on a quicker schedule. I'm not saying 6 every year, but certainly a little bit more of a competitive frequency. And secondly, I think she's finally coming into her own. I think you're finally seeing that.
People love her. She is an like instant fan favorite at any turn. Maybe it's the cosplay thing. I'm not really sure. But to be able to reach 35 for female fighters, you don't see a lot of Holly Holmes who can stay elite late into their 30s.
Right.
And for her to now be just figuring out, we're seeing somebody like Kovalkiewicz at 34 who seems same division,
done.
Seems done.
Yeah.
This is impressive.
Certainly is, and
she was in like hella shape. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah, no. And then she's traveling. She's not just doing it in her hometown. She's going all over the world and still getting pretty impressive.
Is this a
wins.
DC thing? Isn't she a DC?
She is. She's DC as well.
All right.
She also came to our DC symposium, so that was very nice of her too. Very smart lady. Okay, with that in mind, Cobb. Or am I say Cobb? That's what I call my other producer. I'm tired. Sorry. It's time where you donks get to write us questions. It's time for DMs from donks. Jesus Christ, I'm tired. All right, there you have it. We have animation and everything. All right, there, Brian Campbell.
Split screen here, Luke, all right?
Split screen. Here, this one will go to you first from boxing.classics. What do you think of the PBC guys all predicting Wilder to win, then to say afterwards that they thought Fury was going to win? Now, I'm not sure what he's talking about, but I guess the ESPN broadcast or the pay-per-view broadcast?
I'm not sure specifically who he's talking about. I mean, it's not a surprise to me that guys in the same promotion would support each other. I mean, I do a podcast every week with Rashad Evans. He always picks his teammates or ex-teammates to win. It's just sort of a thing that happens, and they're switching it back afterwards can be a little bit hairy, but I don't know specifically who he's talking about.
Have you gone back and watched the fights after the fact on the broadcast?
I have not yet.
I'd be curious to see what you thought about the broadcast. It was Joe.
It's like an all-star game, right?
It was Joe Tessitore, and it was Andre Ward, and it was Lennox Lewis. The standout for me was Andre Ward. He was great.
He's getting better. He's not only great, he's getting better every time.
But obviously, you know he's got great analysis, but his broadcast delivery is beginning to have just the right amount of enthusiasm behind
and
it.
I tried to talk him into fighting Canelo, and he turned me down.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But Lennox Lewis, I don't like on the Fox broadcasts.
We can just be honest about this, can't we, Luke?
He's not good.
He's never been good. He's never been good.
Well, here's the difference, though. You should listen to this one. Because Ward was speaking and they're essentially covering the same beat, by virtue of the editing that happened to the overall volume of commentating he did, he was actually better this time. And I think Joe Tessitore is one of those guys, either you like him or you don't. I like
him.
He's
smooth. He is so. I've worked with him. He's smooth.
Guess who was hating on him? Jay.
If we were allowed to say the things that Jay has hated on today, this calendar day, the amount of beautiful women that Jay's just hated on already.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't go public with that.
Jay's
Jay,
like, this 10 out of 10 is a zero. You know, I'm like, okay.
I mean, luckily we have standards at Morning Combat, like Death Row. We're not going to put the producer in the videos dancing around. I mean, this guy's trying to get on our show.
Thank you, Suge Knight. Let's go to at the.jason.moore. What did you make of Wilder pacing for over an hour in the back? I've often heard how fighters have that moment right before a walkout where they know if they trained hard or not to win or lose a fight. I don't really buy this at all. I think that this is why he lost. I think that he was focused. He wasn't pacing super hard. If he lacked energy in the fight, there were much more identifiable reasons for that. Now, yes, it was in strong contrast to Tyson Fury, who was all smiles and giggling, and look, he was getting ready for a wedding, for crying out loud.
I mean, dude, can we just stop on that for a second? Like, I was trying to talk before about how I think Tyson Fury's mental toughness is, like, all time. It's legendary, right?
It's out of this world.
But, like, he always says, you know, I'm a fighting man. I come from generations of bare knuckle. Like, a fight to me is something I get excited about. Like, how loose he is, it's almost insane, Luke. Like, do you ever see that video that floated around that he took, like, 3 hours before the Klitschko fight? He was, like, dancing and doing karaoke and, like, doing inappropriate grinding and stuff and just being, like, you know, like, and that was a fight everybody thought he was going to be walking in there and getting knocked out.
Right.
It's wild. I do wish, and we're probably going to get it once Deontay Wilder goes public, but, you know, he didn't do the post-fight press conference because he was in the hospital, but him mentioning during the in-ring interview the personal problems, I'm not saying this to build this as an excuse, I'm just interested because something about it just didn't seem like him on this night, aside from just getting handled, aside from just getting beat.
Do you buy that the pacing was the reason? I don't buy
that. I don't know what it is, but I'm interested to see if it's something because every other fight, except for the first Fury fight, we've seen Wilder at his absolute menacing best, never getting down, poised as there, can lose 8 rounds against Luis Ortiz and still be happy, excited, confident, and poised to bring the boom. The first Fury fight, he was very honest afterwards about how he tried too hard for the knockout. He was nervous. He froze a little bit in, you know, from the luster of the event. I wonder if there was something about Fury. If you're just facing a guy who you know has your number, is that the thing that maybe...
I don't buy that.
That rattled
him? If you
go
and look at his strategy early in the first and second rounds, you could tell he was trying to implement what I thought was going to be a key part of his game plan, which were jabs to the body and his own feints. Dude, you got to say it out loud. Fury took it away from him. Now, maybe he had some kind of injury that it was on his mind and he was trying to calm himself. But you got to remember, every fighter is different. They all have their own customized strategy, their own customized prep. Some like to do long warm-ups. Some like to do short warm-ups. Some like are very happy. Some are very dour. Brandon Vera, even in his prime before the whole fall-off, I know that he used to vomit right before walkout. It would actually make commission members nervous.
You usually drop a deuce before the show.
I'm dropping a deuce right now in my pants. But the point being is everyone is a little bit different. Everyone's got their own situation. So maybe there was something to it. I'm not saying that there's not. To me, it's like, I don't know why you can't just say what it was. He just got walloped by a better boxer, and that's the end of it.
That's fair.
All right.
I'm trying to do forensics here.
All right, man. Let's go to M. Porter 440. I'll pitch this one to you.
Wow.
Should Wilder work with Joshua Fabia to improve his defense?
You mean, should he train for the trilogy with tarot cards? Is that what you're saying, Luke?
It's his question. How do you want to handle that?
No.
Did you hear my interview?
I tried to hear your interview.
Why would you listen to anything I did?
Well, no, that's a false narrative, Luke, okay? I'm going to be honest with you. Luke Thomas used to host this show called Luke Thomas is Pissed.
Yes.
I thought it was ahead of its time, and I still think it would work today. Remember that you had the manila folders,
yep,
and you were like,
it was ahead of its time.
I hate Tom Brady and Brett Favre, and here's why, and you just rip people. It was great. What happened?
I quit it, actually, so I could focus on other things.
All right, don't quit this job, okay?
No, I'm not. What did you? You have any comment about the whole Fabio thing?
The guy's a clown, dude. The guy is a clown. Okay, I think you nailed it from the idea of he gave Diego confidence at a point, at a very tender point in his career. Okay, and sometimes yes, we cling to people who. That's why yes men are invented. We cling to people who sort of fill the doubts that we have in ourselves. Our spouses, in some ways, sort of fill the gaps of what we're missing as people. Right. That's why
agree,
it works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm getting real with you,
Luke. Does this mean that you're an emotionally needy man who leans on his wife for motherly help?
Oh, wow. That was very Freudian of you. No, that does not mean that.
But, I'm just asking. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. I don't really balance checkbooks too well. You know.
I hear you. It's like Voltron. Makes a greater hole.
Yeah.
Bubber97 says, thoughts on Woman having a possible advantage in grappling due to the fact that they can wear a full shirt?
That's up your alley, Luke.
Yeah, well, it's not a possible advantage. It's an absolute advantage. But the thing is, first of all, it's not a shirt. It's a rash guard. There's a difference.
I love Woman. That's great.
I know. He's like,
whoa,
It's like Conan say, thoughts on Woman have advantage.
That was a 90s reference, by
the way. Who's talking,
though?
So
Hulk? I married an axe murderer. I know you missed that, but keep going.
Yeah, it's an absolute advantage. But it just depends on how you use it. Like, Roxanne Modafferi wears one, Lauren Murphy wears one. But if the fight is mostly...
Juliana Pena?
Yeah, she wore one. But it's like if you fight and you're mostly just striking, even if you're in the 50-50 part of the clinch, it's probably not that big a deal. To me, it's a bigger deal when you're on top and you're trying to control an opponent in grappling situations, or if you have the back and you're trying to prevent them, you know, one of the keys to maintaining back control is symmetry between your shoulders and theirs. And to the extent that that provides friction and that helps you maintain the back, yeah, it is an advantage. You know, am I in a position to be like, women should just wear bikinis to fight? I don't want to be that dude.
When Rousey wore just that bra against Carmouche, she almost got face cranked because she kept trying to pull it up. You remember that?
Yeah, but also her goods almost fell out of their clothing.
I didn't go there.
Right. No, but it's a real thing. Like, here, the point is, some women wear the rash guard because they don't trust the normal athletic apparel to protect them. And I'm like, if that's the case, what are you supposed to say, you know? You know which one I think the good, is the good...
You're calling them the goods? Is that no. PC?
The good middle ground?
Yes.
Is the one that's like the tank top, so it doesn't cover the shoulders and like this part of the top of the chest, but if you want your like... It still hangs like a shirt a little bit.
I love when you mansplain brassieres in the functionality of
MMA. Mansplain would be to another woman. You're not a woman. Right? That was a very mansplaining way to describe it.
You always pull out the dictionary. You're such a dick, you know?
You got to use the words correctly. What do you want to tell me? Hand me your wrench. You mean the mug? Sorry, it's not a wrench.
This is called a cup condom.
Yes. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Dental dam, I think. Yes.
Why does... Okay, this is from Cian Bari. Sean... Dude, how do you pronounce the C-I-A-N in Irish? How do you pronounce that? Do you have that up?
I'm only an eighth Irish, so...
Do you have that up? Here it is. Cian Bari. Have you ever seen that? Sean? Is it Sean?
It's probably Celtic for Sean.
Sean. Why does Brian regret the whole tip-to-tip bit?
Yeah, what did this... I got a lot of DMs this weekend of people like, I hear you regretting it.
Should I show them the text messages of you explicitly telling me you regret it?
You. All right, here's the deal, okay? I inadvertently, very gremlin-like, right? Very, very much like Gremlins 1, I inadvertently started a revolution by bringing to light these regional pro. Can we get the shot? Let me figure this out here. These regional Polish MMA superstars behind me.
Slovenian, that
comes
out.
Come to find out, and I forgot the guy's name, but somebody slid in my DMs to help me decode this. These are two Slovakian kickboxers.
Slovenian.
Thought they were. This is Slovakia.
Slovenia.
There's Slovakia and there's Slovenia. They're two different countries.
Right.
This is Slovakia. I thought
they were Slovenian.
Tomato, tomato. Anyway, I'm now.
They're like Trump's wife.
I'm now following both on Instagram, and we're close. Okay.
Are you guys tip to tip close?
No, stop that. But the point of this is, does this guy like childish banter and locker room jokes? Yes. But do I want you guys to fill my DMs with actual dongs? No. I live and die by the rule of,
dude, you
of
getting
no stick
sent,
pics,
you
all
getting
right?
sent dick pics so, is perfect karma.
Do I want people to comment on my, you know, my breakdown on CBS Sports HQ on YouTube of the Fury fight? It's got like 3.7 million, you know, all these comments like, wow, never saw Brian do a breakdown without bringing up cock. It's
right.
Like, well, yeah, that's really not what I'm trying to do here.
I've been waiting for it for
all right?
6
you
months.
Know, so, I don't mean to be a C blocker on my own movement here, but there's a time and a place. You know, have you seen this shit? You'll see that shit. Okay?
Hey, please keep sending Brian your dick pics.
No.
All of them.
I mean the tattoos that people send me of the phallic nature of it. I'm not in it for that. Okay, I like to have a good laugh. You know what I'm saying?
Send Brian your dick pics.
But then you got Luke going on his live shows going, you know, Brian just goes in a locker room. He's just looking for dicks. You know, it's like, well, not really.
You are definitely the straightest dick inspector in the world.
Yeah, see, this is why I think I'm gonna have to shut this thing down. Okay?
You go,
we had a good run. We had a good run with tips, but.
You go into the locker room, you have some chemists have like the periodic table of elements. You've got the periodic table of cock right
these
here.
These Slovakian heroes, we're going to have them on. We're going to have them talking about it. Okay. Thank you.
Certain dicks do this when they're there. Oh, you know, okay, that's you. All right, so that's up for our DMs. By the way, folks always ask how to do that. Go to Morning Combat on Sundays.
On
Sundays
Instagram.
We put up a post on Instagram and leave a comment there. Don't shoot me a DM because it's going to get deleted. With that in mind, it is the time for Brian to be Brian.
Oh, it's that time already. All right.
Take it away, Brian.
Have you seen this shit is up next? As you know, there it is. We scour the globe for the best, the good, the bad, the worst, the ugly in combat sports and beyond. I'm liking it, except for the ish on the eye. I don't like that. Can we remove that
Why?
Ish right there? A little gross. All right.
All right. We need this TV over a little more.
All right. Here we go. Number one, UFC Auckland, Luke. This fella, Brad Riddell, he had a sensational split decision win over Magomed Mustafayev.
Well, drinking a beer not out of your shoe.
And look at him going out to the crowd and one time in that thing. Respect on that or what?
Yeah, big time. Can I have to say, I think the shoey is so played out.
It's so played out and gross. But we didn't get to talk about his performance. He's impressive.
Dude, he looked awesome.
Everyone from this freaking gym looks like a future champion.
Yeah, can we say this honestly? And I'm being dead serious for just a second. Oh, we can get back to being silly in just a moment. Has City Kickboxing for a non-huge gym, like it doesn't have like ATT number of guys?
Yeah.
Have they had the best year of any gym in MMA
ever.
History?
I mean, I want to know what's in the water. I want to know what they're doing to each other. I want to know what. Yeah, let's find out. Let's do an expo. You and I will fly down there, Luke. All right.
You can go to the locker room. I'll go on the mats.
All right. Here we go. Hey, shout out to Riddell, who looks great. Also at UFC Auckland this weekend. Did you see Priscilla?
I'm told Cachuera.
Cachuera. She once got sent to hell by Shevchenko. She returned the favor. This is the fastest finish in UFC.
Women's history, no?
UFC women's flyweight history, right?
I'm sorry, yes.
Against Shayna Dobson, that uppercut. Wow, Luke. Wow.
Yeah, it was nice.
Chin checker.
Still not convinced about her UFC potential, but...
I'm enjoying this on a loop, though. I mean, look at this.
Also, I think Shayna Dobson's another DC native.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to transfer from etiquette inside the cage to plane etiquette. We all hate flying, Luke. Would you accept this if you were sitting behind this guy?
No.
Oh, God.
Dude, why do people feel entitled to take their fucking shoes off?
Okay, I take my shoes off.
You leave
sometimes.
Your socks on?
I don't usually wear socks, but I've gone barefoot.
You don't wear socks?
I like to let them breathe. All right, but there's a difference, Luke. I'm not gonna be like.
Dude, are you a fucking serial killer? Who doesn't wear socks?
You've never worn like low sneakers without socks, or you've never worn.
No, I don't murder children in their sleep. What kind of a question is that?
In the winter, I wear socks, but I'm not wearing socks right now, Luke. I'm sorry. It's just what it is.
So wait. Let me get this straight.
That is true, Corey. It is the winter.
When you
right
go
now,
through
yeah.
TSA, you're walking bare through the metal detector.
I have done that, which is not a good thing because I've got a really gross toe. It's all black and stuff.
You are a fucking troglodyte. You are. What are you?
Luke, do you know how dirty planes are anyway? What's the difference?
Yeah, you know what? Why don't you just squat?
But
just
I'm
take
saying,
a, take a dump in
there's
the aisle
limits.
While you're
at so okay. So me taking off my slip-on sneaker, like dad shoes, like Vans, whatever, and then just having bare feet under the chair—that's one thing. This insert dictionary word that means Cretan something.
This next Brian level, Campbell
is just like scrolling, like, oh, what am I gonna watch here? Am I gonna watch?
Yeah, I mean, this is you gotta tell the stewardess at some point, being like, dude, what the fuck is wrong with you?
This is disgusting.
I would say this though. I think if. For example, pregnant women on flights should be able to take their shoes off, I think.
Or can they disrobe and
Yeah, of course. They got to feed their fucking kids. Don't be weird about breastfeeding. But you absolute child molester, should not be taking your shoes off with no socks.
But it's under the chair in front of me. I got long legs.
I don't give a shit, dude. It's not your fucking living room. Act like, dude, you are... Don't... What are you? Do you live with animals? Do you have dogs?
I have two dogs and two cats.
I mean...
And two kids. One wife, though, Luke.
And two bars. And I got B's on my D's like I'm Chico DeBarge. Look, the point being is...
Wow. Can we get some kind of reference for Luke right there?
It's from DJ Clue. The point being is, if you take your shoes off on a plane, I'm side-eyeing you. If you take your shoes off on a plane and you got no socks, you deserve to be thrown out of the plane.
So also I drive...
While it's moving.
If I'm not wearing socks, I drive barefoot. You got any issues?
No, like you mean like Fred Flintstone? Like with your feet on the ground?
With my feet on the pedals, Luke. I feel like I have more direct control if I'm going just skin on pedals.
Can't you just wear like those Vibram five-finger things?
Look, socks are a lot like condoms. Remember how much condoms used to cost back in the day?
I don't know what you're using socks for, but they're not like condoms.
It's half-baked. Sorry. Can we get somebody working the 90s meter who was born at least before 1987? I mean, come on. Jay, it is Jay. Look at that.
Dude, I think not wearing shoes on a plane, you are an absolute cretin.
All right. Hey, the only thing Luke loves about this segment is when animals kill people. Let's throw it up here. There's a leopard on the loose in this European village, and look at this thing just take people out. I hope this doesn't turn into Faces of Death. Remember the time we couldn't show that
bro.
That guy with the snake getting choked to death? Look at this leopard.
Is that Europe?
I don't know where this is, Luke. I'm going to guess Europe. Maybe it's Slovenia or Slovakia. But this leopard just cleaning house, Luke. I've never seen so many people run from pussy before.
They probably killed that poor thing, to be honest with you.
Wow.
Yeah, you can miss me with the animal abuse.
I don't think it's animal abuse. I think it's... Look at that takedown right there. Wow.
All right. Well, I mean, yeah.
I'm sorry, Luke. I'm sorry. Yeah. This today's segment not moving you. Hey, Bellator had two cards this weekend.
Oh, shit.
A little bit weird.
Fucking shit.
Did you see Ricky Bendejas catch the kick and just take this dude out? Here, hold this for a second, as Luke would say.
I did not see that. He's all bitter.
King Mo posting that. Shout out to King Mo.
Bop.
Goes with the kick. The guy catches it, and then a little three-piece for him.
Dude, look at that beating the drum.
Are we seeing that catching a kick is it's just lowering your guard, right? It's bringing down your hands.
Well, look. Hold on. Let's see. Catches it. Oh, you know what?
Look at this. He's painting him right there.
Yeah, but you see how high he is on the when he catches? He's right around the knee versus right around the ankle.
That's like he could have just stocked and slapped him out right there.
Yeah.
It's borderline, right? Hey, did you know that?
He's too close.
You know that Kevin Lee has a brother named Keith who's a
MMA
fighter?
Yeah, dude, he whooped ass.
Made his Bellator debut. Look at this knee.
Welcome. Jesus.
My God, did you see the neck? Just, wow. Borderline decapitation.
Dude, was this Sean Bunch did this too? Oh, dude, that is brutal.
Whew. Sorry, random guy in black shorts. You've been sent to hell. Oh, yes. All right. Luke, have you ever heard of former UFC fighter Abdul Karim Edilov, a.k.a. the Chechen Lion?
Yeah, he fights for
This is his second pro boxing bout, and he just sent Ibrahim Labaran to the deep, dark depths of hell.
I believe this is one of Ramzan Kadyrov's guys. So
it's actually Kadyrov's guy who trains Kadyrov's sons and acts like an uncle to them.
Good job giving that guy a platform.
Were you a big fan of his UFC career?
No. I mean, he's a talented fighter. But
pretty good knockout here, right?
No, it's great. A little left hook to finish the combo. Yeah,
it's great. Hey, let's see some ass crack. There was sumo wrestling over the weekend, Luke. Curtis Blaydes and Rumble John. What is going on here?
You know what? I actually like this. A little sumo.
You're an ass man. Yeah, I can see that.
I like how there's no way you can take this seriously.
I mean, it's 2020. Can we put on a full pair of granny panties here? Do we have to go with the thong?
I like that these professional grappling organizations are experimenting a little bit.
With us seeing this guy's cock and balls, that's dude, not an experimentation.
You're bitter that his cock and balls didn't fall out, so you can just sit there and gawk at it. You were like, you know what sucked about this sumo wrestling match? The lack of visible dicks.
Hey, Blaydes won, all right?
Yeah, he did.
Razor Blaydes, yeah. Can we see Rumble Johnson back as a heavyweight? Can we please see John Jones, Rumble
Johnson?
What's
the holdup on that, by the way?
I don't know. But this man's going to hurt somebody really bad.
Yeah, he is.
All right. Let's roll on from here. Shout out to this teacher on the playground, very Billy Madison. Like, watch this killer crossover. Oh God! He just broke that kid's ankle and his spleen.
Did he actually trip him? Let's see. Oh, he sure did. Dude, that's what Tyson Fury did to Deontay Wilder.
I have sons; they're 12, and we go in the driveway and play hoops all the time. It is so easy to cross over
a kid,
aggressive kids who would just go flying. But this, he just did this kid wrong. I mean, come on. If that's your kid and you're watching this for the first time, you gotta be pissed, right?
Yeah, my daughter could just barely stand, so I don't quite understand the joy.
Oh, Doyle rules, indeed. Wow. Speaking of youth basketball fails, I want you to check out this next game right here. Look at a kid wearing
a
black shirt, number two. See number two right there with the black shirt?
Yeah, in the back.
Watch him. Oh no, he's going the wrong way. He's going the wrong way. Somebody stop him.
You know what? He just wanted a free
somebody
point.
Stop him. What is this coach doing? Mutombo! No.
That is
that can't
awesome.
Be legal, Luke.
You know, that poor kid.
Oh, I shot out the wrong hoop one time. People still
heckled
me.
He was so excited he was about to score.
Oh, my God. That
he
guy
was so excited
that
he was
guy
about
threw
to score.
His shit, Luke.
You know what? You gotta let kids be kids, bro.
Unless the coach is the dad, that's a rough move. That's a rough lesson to learn right there. It's like Woody Hayes coming out and punching that kid, you know? No? All right.
Yeah, go ahead. Next one.
Hey, let's go here. Let's go back to Wilder Fury, something we haven't talked about a lot. What was Tyson Fury doing here?
Okay, so
this
people...
This is gross,
okay,
bro.
Let's debate this for a second. People said I had people say he was licking the blood, and then I had people say, no, he does this to all his fans. He just like the Shakira thing at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with blood licking. Where do you come down on this one?
I thought it was his way of saying, look, I'm a savage. I want to taste your blood, BJ Penn blood, exactly.
That's
like
what
that.
I thought it was, too.
And if it's that, it's not that it's, I think it's disgusting either way, but I get why so many people loved it because it's sort of this, I'm the man, I just killed you type of thing. I don't need it, though. This is gross. This is not good.
I got to tell you, I kind of respect it a little bit.
Oh, I knew you would. Would you respect if he took a bite, if Ivan red-cocked him and took
you,
a bite
would you like me to get on the show and lie to you? I don't think you would. So I'm going to tell you the truth.
Have you ever hunted?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
You going to talk about that with Joe Rogan?
We might. Yes, I've been hunting. I've hunted deer. I've hunted turkey. I've hunted, doves and whatnot. That's just shooting.
I've hunted tail for a bunch of years, not successfully. Yeah,
why is that the least surprising thing you've ever told
Chasing
me?
Chasing the muff around, right?
I've had to do the whole butchering of the deer and everything. I had to skin it the whole night.
Yeah. All right. Hey, speaking of that lick, it did remind me, like you just jumped the gun there, of the Super Bowl, which was also pretty.
Wait, hold on. Does the room think he was licking the blood?
I thought it was going for blood.
Yeah?
I thought he changed his mind.
It was Jay, the ultimate contrarian, says he was not licking the blood.
All right. I don't think he touched it.
No, but the question is, what was he intending to do? I don't know. I thought it was like, you know, dude, if you're beating up a guy and you lick his blood, almost like whispering sweet nothings in his ear, you have absolutely emasculated him. That's what
I think.
Why
don't you just wet William with your tongue and just listen?
Because that is the precursor to banging. So I don't think that they wanted to do that.
It was reminiscent of Can We Roll It from the Super Bowl halftime show, which is, it's making me uncomfortable. I mean, it's like, it's hot, but it's also weird, Luke. Is there a cultural thing that I'm crapping on that don't realize?
Yeah, there
it?
Is, actually.
Then I take it back, okay? I am not a racist because I didn't enjoy this halftime show, but I know who inspired Shakira. Can we play it in the back? You ever see the 90s movie Kingpin, Luke?
Yeah, one of my favorites.
All right, this is probably your favorite scene, right?
You're late on the rent, Munson. You know what my favorite line is from this movie? And Jose, let me get both parts out. Let me get both parts out. Hey, what was Roy was his first name,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Hey, Roy, can you get sick drinking piss? Even if it's your own?
You ever see the closing credits?
I don't think so.
We have them right here. Jay, can you advance the film, please? Great movie, Woody Harrelson.
Oh, that's so gross.
Because he can't pay rent, so he bangs her.
Yeah.
And remember, he's at the toilet kind of throwing up. And she's like, it wasn't that bad. Come on.
No, and she also says, because of the way you banged her, that she got to take a good crap because everything got loosened up. Oh, let me ask you.
So
better,
gross.
better Farrelly Brothers? Farley Brothers?
Farley, yeah.
Better of those two brothers' movies, Dumb and Dumber or Kingpin?
Kingpin. Dumb and Dumber is the most overrated funny movie of all time. And I know lightning just struck me and people are watching
their
meds.
Does that mean you like it or you don't like it?
I mean, it's not that. Dumb and Dumber is hilarious, but okay. It's so overrated. It's sort of like a...
Well, Dumb and Dumber is not overrated,
it's a niche of slapstick comedy. It's a niche of the overall world of slapstick comedy that just isn't my favorite. I'm more of a one-liner Tommy Boy type guy.
Well, I don't agree with that assessment. However, what I will say is I do think Kingpin is better.
Kingpin is a great film.
Kingpin is super underrated.
Randy Quaid as the Amish guy is fantastic. And of course,
what was her name?
Bill Murray's.
No. Who was the woman in there? Who was like the 90s it girl?
Oh, yeah. Vanessa Angel, maybe?
Is that her name?
She was in Spies Like Us. She was the Hot Russian.
She was in Weird Science. Remember Weird Science?
She wasn't. That was Kelly LeBrock.
You sure?
Before Steven Seagal got her. And God.
You have the worst uppercut I've ever seen.
There's video out there, but I hope it never hits a lot. Brandon Wise, don't show that video. All right, Max Muay Thai. You ever hear of this league? They jump on here a lot. Check out this insane head kick KO.
Is that Kevin Ross?
Oh, my God. Very reminiscent of Rousey Holm. Rousey wins again. Wow. That's
me waking up for the shift here on the show.
Yes. Wow. Anytime you can get on the outside of the shoulder,
I'm
Luke,
like, is it 4 a.m. again?
Why don't you just move out of D.C.? Come on.
Hey, all right. You want me to move? Pay me.
There you go.
Yeah. Hold that.
Hold that shit. All right. Hey, let's go to the gym, Luke, because you do a lot of time powerlifting. This is called gym etiquette. What do you think of this guy's etiquette? Is this acceptable to take a stick pick before your set?
Is he taking a dick pic before he's benching 135?
He probably DM'd me it afterwards. These are our listeners right here, by the way. This is why I got to stop this movement of dick trade. Okay, Luke, no more dick trading. Okay, I'm not into this. But that's lame. Come on, there's people watching. Yeah, good head movement. You're right.
Yeah, he looks at it. He goes, got it, nailed it.
All right. You ever get asked to spot somebody and it's real awkward? Then did that guy ever mount you when he was spotting you?
Yeah, don't do this. You do it from the back.
Luke, that's tip to tip. That shit is.
Wait, but is that a Sikh who is don't make a fucking racist joke. Don't do it. Is that a Sikh who is lifting there?
It might be.
Jay, is that a turban?
We're not really looking at the head so much as the head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm warning you. Yeah. Don't make a fucking racist joke.
I didn't. All right. I'm just saying that you know, tip to tip's not for everybody. I would not want this out of my spotter. All right.
Yeah, you do it from the back. Also, here's the key to not asking people to spot you. I have over-the-ear headphones, and I don't talk to anybody. I don't look to anybody.
You actually can't hear with those because I've been in public situations where I'm screaming.
Yeah, because they're noise canceling. On purpose. So I get the audio, it's pumping, plus I get to cut out you jabronis.
All right, we're going to close on this clip. More gym etiquette to hit the road with this. What do you think? Is this acceptable, Luke?
Every week. Every week, I forget that you're deranged.
I mean, here, okay, but look, it does have a functional purpose in the gym, right? I mean, it does.
Every week, I forget that you're
a demented person. I didn't stage this. I'm not the director of this film, okay?
You featured it on the show. I didn't send this clip to Jay.
Our listeners, our viewers sent this in to me. I mean, I couldn't avoid it. I mean, what are they doing?
Oh, they both get into the action. Well, the movement that they're doing.
Is this an adult film? What is this?
The movement that they're doing is legitimate.
Have you ever put small weights around No?
You know what's funny? There's actually a study that came out this week that shows that relative to deadlifts, this is not as effective for glute activation, which would be my serious take on this. So I'll just say,
XM, yeah.
So I'll just say, dude, you need psychological counseling.
All right. Well, this is the end. Okay.
Dude,
the tip to tip movement is going to pause. We're going to go pause on tip to tip. Okay. I'm going to get these Slovakian.
Did you have
superheroes.
Like an accident with your dick as a kid or something? What happened?
That's not acceptable. That's inappropriate. I mean, that's just.
Is it really?
Did you just ask another man that? You know.
Yeah. Motherfucker, look what you do every week.
So look, there's people that cook meth. They never touch the stuff. All right. They're a pawn in the deadly drug trade.
You think you're Walter White, motherfucker?
You're the Walter White
of dicks?
Yes, I am. In the dick trade, unfortunately, I've gotten too powerful.
Does that make me Jesse?
I've gotten too powerful in the dick trade, Luke, and I need to get out, okay?
Does that make me the Jesse of dicks?
I need to pull out of the dick trade, okay?
At least let me be the Gus Fring of dicks or something. I don't know.
When we get these Slovakian superheroes on, Luke, that'll end. Why don't you tell them what the plan is?
Be serious. Tell them what the plan is.
Both of these gentlemen... They speak English. That's the plan.
By the way, he knows this because he checked.
I found him.
No, the plan is, look, we've never had, we don't have an anti-fighter policy on the
show. No, you have an anti-fighter.
Okay, I have an anti-fighter policy.
Ever since John Jones sent you to hell.
No. I just don't like, I don't want to have artificial conversations. That's not what the show is about. And a lot of fighters, they're so used to having artificial conversations, they can't do it otherwise. So, to the extent that we can get a fighter in here who's willing to have a real conversation, they are invited and they have to be in person. The one exception that we're going to make is Brian, we told him, I said, Brian, if you can set up a Skype interview with the Dick Touchers, we will interview them on the show, and not about any fights they have coming up, we'll interview them about what made them famous.
I forgot the name of the promotion that they're in, but...
Infusion?
The guy with the hat is still the champion. He won the title in this fight in 2015, and he's still the champion.
Also, underrated about this, and you always ignore it, they're also smooching in the clip.
Well, what's that chick doing? And they made a heart, and she's right there in the middle of the heart?
I don't know.
I feel like, yeah, I've seen adult movies that start that way.
With two guys touching
dicks? No.
What the fuck are you watching?
Different math. Yeah.
All right.
See, this is, and people wonder why I regret it, Luke, okay?
Send all of your dick pics
no,
to
Gizmo
Brian.
No, Gizmo was very cute until midnight, right? Until, I mean, like...
And then you just put water on his back.
And that was that.
Okay, with that in mind, it's time for odds and ends. Brian Campbell, give me your odds and ends.
I got a few here, Lukas.
Hit me with them.
All right, hit me with the horns money. I'm going to tell you this. This weekend on DAZN, there's a boxing welterweight fight that I'm really excited about. And when it was announced, I wasn't moved. Mikey Garcia, second fight at welterweight against Jesse Vargas, who's coming down from 154, former title holder. Luke, I still think we don't know for sure if Mikey Garcia is a real welterweight. The Errol Spence fight was like a 12-round shutout. Mikey's won titles from 126 through 140, whatever. Yep. Jesse Vargas is a big welterweight who's coming down from 54 and is known in the second half of his career as an action fighter who goes to the body and makes fights happen. This is a potential trap fight here. Mikey Garcia is very skilled. He's an accurate counterpuncher. He hits hard.
This is on DAZN?
This is on DAZN.
So also a question. Did he sign a one-fight deal with DAZN?
He did sign a one-fight deal for the idea of if he wins this, maybe he would get Pacquiao on DAZN after Pacquiao's PBC contract runs out. This is going to be a good action fight because Mikey's going to have to fight against this guy. So I'm looking forward to it. It snuck up on us when it was announced. We're like, oh, all right, Jesse Vargas is okay. But the reality is, well, go back and watch Jesse Vargas against Broner or against Delorme. Like, he brawls nowadays. He goes after it.
Broner got arrested over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Very out of character for him.
It happened.
Go ahead, next. Anything else? You said a couple of these.
Yeah, I had a few other ones. What else did
I have? Let me do mine real quickly, and maybe it'll jog your memory. For me, don't forget, this coming weekend is UFC Norfolk, which happens to be the flyweight title is going to be up for grabs. Deiveson Figueiredo taking on Joseph Benavidez. Benavidez actually turns out with the odds makers a bit of a slight favorite. He's not like the prohibitive favorite, which I'm a little surprised by. Although Deiveson Figueiredo is pretty good. His best win, if you ask me, is John Moraga. I think he lost to Formiga in 2019. He has two more wins past that. I'm glad to see the flyweight title back in rotation.
So you don't think the division should have been folded?
I wouldn't have cared if they did. But if they're going to keep it around, give these guys fights. And I'll say this about Joseph Benavidez. 6 years between title shots. He probably just didn't know what was going to happen. They nearly folded the division. I don't know if he's going to win, but I will say if he does, it would be a monumental achievement for him. He's one of the good guys in the sport.
He's one of those longtime bridesmaids where you're like, that's a title contender type, yeah. Like a guy who, a championship material, just never got
the
chance.
Who had to either fight out of his weight class or fight the all-time best flyweight ever in Demetrius Johnson. Well, finally he's got a chance to put his own stamp on the division.
He doesn't have to go through Cejudo to get there. It's interesting, even though you already beat him.
Well, I mean, if he goes back to the division, we'll see. But the point being is, for at least Saturday, you can't say I've been stuck under the thumb of something else. Now is your chance to get ahead. So the flyweight title up for grabs in Norfolk, Virginia.
Today is a happy birthday. Floyd Mayweather, Luke.
Wow.
43. He's been celebrating his birthday all weekend. He's been all over Instagram and stuff. People asked him if he's going to come back. He gave the typical Floyd answers, which is no answer. But in your heart of hearts, Luke, does this 43-year-old fight this calendar year?
I don't know.
Whether it's Habib in a boxing match, Conor rematch.
I've been so wrong about Floyd so many times. I just don't know. To be honest, as part of me, it's like I'd be kind of interested to see who it is.
What do you think about talk that Floyd is saying, I will box Conor and Habib on the same day, like one in the morning, one at night?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just, you know, silly.
But remember when Roy Jones did that bit where he beat up the guy and then he played basketball in the morning? And
Yeah. I'll just say this. If he really is able to win because he can train and do something kind of interesting, then fine. But I'm less interested in him just, you know, flying over to Japan, taking a paycheck to go beat up some, you know, essentially, what do you want to say, flyweight or whatever.
Even though he's the ultimate heel and villain, and he's made his money and his...
Number one villain in MMA is Floyd Mayweather.
He's made his money and career on the idea of, like, I'm going to make you not like me so you pay to see me lose. Mm-hmm. Would you be upset if he did add an actual loss in an actual fight in one of these sort of cheesy situations? You know, late in his career. Like, he's not going to be fighting Crawford or Spence.
Yes. If he overstayed his welcome and then, you know, everything he built went up in smoke because he just mishandled himself and everything about what he was in his prime was so careful, it would be kind of like, dude, what'd you do that for?
Like some cut against Conor in the rematch. Right.
You couldn't invest your money elsewhere and, like, just, you know, get dividends from that. But
what's your favorite Floyd moment?
In his whole career?
Yeah, I mean, you and I came of age in the boxing trade. Ooh. In the Mayweather era. When people always ask me, they go, when you're old and you have grandkids, and they're going to say, what'd you do for a living? They're going to say, who'd you cover? I'm going to say Floyd.
I will say because I did not think it was possible, not that he couldn't win, similar to this Fury and Wilder situation, when he stopped Ricky Hatton. I know that's a little bit later in his career, but it's the one to me where I thought Floyd just styled on him.
Yeah.
And he looked unbelievable. And then the fact that he put his lights out in, was it the 11th round, memory serves?
Check hook, yeah. Check left hook, face first into the corner.
It wasn't prime, well, maybe kind of prime Floyd, but it was vintage Floyd, and it was Floyd at his very best.
I'm still not going to ever get over, and obviously this win has aged so much better with Canelo becoming, you know, arguably the pound-for-pound king, but the ease in which 36-year-old Mayweather beat Canelo.
Yeah, but he had to...
I know
he
Canelo
drained
was
himself
23.
And he was...
I know he cut him down 2 pounds. I know he's 23, but look, the ease. He was clowning him at the end. Remember when Canelo missed and ran into the ropes?
That's not what CJ Ross had to say.
That is true. All right, to close, over odds and ends, over under? Odds,
yes.
Oh, it's called odds and ends.
I got another show I got to do.
I popped over the weekend. I don't know if you saw Leila Ali, 42-year-old, arguably the greatest female boxer of all time. She was on ESPN to preview the Wilder-Fury fight, and she said for the first time publicly, I might fight and come back after being out of the game for, what, 11 or 12 years and fight Clarissa Shields mm-hmm. if the money is right.
I think Clarissa
that
beats
got
the
me.
Shit out of her. Don't you?
In theory, the younger prime fighter should, but Clarissa's now going down to like 54. What, she won her first title at 68. Leila Ali fought at 68 in her prime. I mean, look, the odds are against Leila Ali having success because she's been out for 11, 12 years. But what she said in that interview was that she has a whole lifestyle brand which is built on exercise and eating well. She hasn't been in the gym training, but she's been in the gym for the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I saw Clarissa Shields this weekend, and in passing, I was talking to her, and she said that she hears that Layla's been training for more than a year for this sort of announcement.
Mm.
Knowing that Clarissa's building, knowing that there's potential, you know, pot of money there.
Layla's never been a bad career manager of her own.
Oh, she's very
she's
impressive.
Always been
very
good.
Impressive.
So that you know what, I would believe that, actually.
Would you pop for this? Because I would get super excited at this.
Sure.
I mean, the Ali name
if
and
that
Layla
is
was
true.
Great.
If that is true, if she's actually spent significant time waiting to get better, And then, you know, sort of reclaim her physicality before making some kind of overture for it, yes.
And the idea that Clarissa doesn't really have anybody else right now on that level, and that they don't like each other. Now, they've been kind of talking trash over social media for a while.
No, it's just that. She was, Layla Lee was on Achim Barak show and just trashed Clarissa there.
So I like a good beef. I like when, you know, because
I know you like beef.
If you're, how dare you? If you're Clarissa and you're saying you're the GOAT, can we take the W out of GOAT? Can we just call her the GOAT?
Yeah.
You should have to go through one of the greats. And I know she's 42, but
hey,
she's an Ali, bro. All right.
Power's the last thing to go. Okay.
I asked that to Jerry Cooney this weekend, and he came up and put his fist right in my
face. You ever held his hand?
Yeah.
Like shook it?
Yeah.
Dude has just, he's got some mitts on him.
One of the nicest people, by the way,
yes,
in the entire sport.
I'll see him today. He does the show after mine. Okay, they'll put up the social so you know how to follow us and all that good stuff. We're going to send Brian your dick pics.
No, look, this is the end, okay? Once these Slovaks get on our show, it's over.
Is it on the screen? I just can't see it. What's the deal? There we go. So here's the deal, as always. This is how you follow us on social, and me and Brian on social for Twitter and Instagram. And then below, Instagram and YouTube for Morning Combat. Like the video, give it a thumbs up, share it around. There is no other show in combat sports.
Yeah, no one's
like this
doing this-ish, okay? And I was told this. Merch is coming.
Somebody, I'll believe that when I see
somebody
it.
In the know has told me merch
is coming. Dude,
seriously,
I need to go.
I have a job out there. Other people, you know.
All right, follow him on social, follow me on social, subscribe, and tell a friend about Morning Combat. There is no show like this one, and we hope you like it as much as we like making it. So, for Brian, I'm Luke. Until next time, may all of your gains be loyal.